Five, four, three, two, one.
What's the situation, Captain?
This is Situation Fluxus, a weekly one-hour program focused on jazz and improvised music, news, radio, conversations, and more. Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Let us dig into the headlines. The Scott Joplin International Ragtime Festival continues through Saturday, June 4th in Sedalia, Missouri. For more information, scottjoplin.org. The Burlington Discover Jazz Festival runs June 3rd through 12th in Burlington, Vermont. For more information, flynnvt.org. The Bronx River Arts Center presents the 19th Annual Bronx River Sounds Performing Arts Festival, Healing, Harmony, and Rejuvenation, taking place on four Saturdays in Bronx, New York, June 4th, 11th, 18th, and 25th, and the Juneteenth Legacy Project on Friday, June 17th. For more information, bronxriverart.org. The Helzberg Jazz Festival, now in its 24th year, will be held June 13th through the 19th in Helzberg, California. For more information, helzbergjazz.org. 577 Records announces a new residency, Sounds of Freedom 2022, taking place October 1st through the 31st in Italy. Five active musicians will be awarded the opportunity to develop their own sound, composition skills, and improvisation concept for a month in the Italian countryside under the mentorship of drummer and Berklee College of Music instructor Francisco Mela. The application deadline is June 15th. For more information, 577records.com/soundsoffreedom. The Robert D. Bilecki Foundation has announced its 2022 recipients. Three of them are bassist Brandon Lopez receiving a recording grant, pianist and composer Satoko Fuji receiving a concert and album support grant, and saxophonist Oliver Lake receiving a Lifetime Achievement Award and recognition during the Vision Festival 2022 in New York City. For more information, rdbf.org. Performing tonight, Thursday, June 2nd at 8 p.m., as part of the Wayward Music Series inside the Chapel Performances space at the Good Shepherd Center in Seattle, Washington, steel pedal guitarist Alan F. Jones and synth player Jason Kahn. For more information, waywardmusic.org. Tonight at Elastic in Chicago, Illinois, guitarist Terry X and Reeds player Ken Vandermark, solos and duos for two sets. For more information, elasticarts.org. This Friday and Saturday night, June 3rd and 4th, the Alexis Cuadrado Group performs silent film scores for social justice for two sets. For more information, jazzgallery.org. Vocalist Thana Alexa kicks off a string of live performances starting tonight at The Nash in Phoenix, Arizona, and on Saturday, June 4th for SD Jazz Ventures Mini Fest of Women in Jazz at the Alexandria in San Diego, California. For more information, ThanaAlexa.com. Jazz at the Vogel, Count Basie Center for the Arts in Red Bank, New Jersey, presents pianist Robert Glasper tomorrow night, Friday, June 3rd, and vocalist Madeline Perot on Saturday, June 4th. For more information, thebasie.org. Bassist Christian McBride and his new John, one of several groups and artists performing at the Longwood Wine and Jazz Festival in Kennett Square, Pennsylvania. For more information, longwoodgardens.org. A number of upcoming performances for violist Jessica Pavone. On Saturday, June 4th, 8 p.m., the Jessica Pavone String Ensemble performs as part of LAMPO Presents in Chicago, Illinois. For more information, lampo.org. On Thursday, June 9th, the Jessica Pavone String Trio at Pioneer Valley Jazz Shares in Amherst, Massachusetts. For more information, jazzshares.org. And on Friday, June 10th, the Jessica Pavone String Ensemble at the Firehouse 12 in New Haven, Connecticut. For more information, firehouse12.com. Saxophonist Charles Lloyd begins his summer tour this Saturday, June 4th, at the Jazz and Wine Fete in Tulsa, Oklahoma. For more information, charlesloyd.com. Jazz Sundays at the Falcon in Marlborough, New York. This Sunday, June 5th, vocalist Alan Harris performs selections from his latest release, Kate's Soul Food. For more information, liveatthefalcon.com. Also, this Sunday in Woodstock, New York, at the Bearsville Jazz Club, during their Sunday Jazz Brunch, guitarist Joel Harrison and his trio. For more information, bearsvilletheater.com/jazz. Guitarist Frank Vignola's Guitar Night with special guest guitarist Ollie Sokoli at Birdland Theater inside of Birdland in New York City on Wednesday, June 8th. For more information, birdlandjazz.com. And now for new releases. Coming out tomorrow, Friday, June 3rd. Saxophonist Daniel Carter, pianist Matthew Shipp, bassist William Parker, and drummer Gerald Cleaver's Welcome Adventure Volume 2 on 577. An electronic and synth player, J. Peter Schalm, and guitarist Stephen Thalen's Trans-Neptunian Planets on Rare Noise. And coming out on Saturday, June 4th, guitarist Aaron Strosner's self-release, Gifts. Other new releases out now. Guitarist Mary Halverson's Amaryllis on Nonesuch, Shabaka's African Culture on Impulse, saxophonist Luis Denise's El Tinajon on Modica Music, and the group Queen Kong's self-release, Frey. All news items have been gathered from various media sources. For the latest updates, contact the source, venue, or business. Remember, I'm just the messenger. And now for some music. Thank you. a selection from one of the two releases by guitarist, composer, and MacArthur fellow Mary Halverson that came out last month on the Nonesuch label. One is titled Belladonna with the Mivos Quartet, and the other Amaryllis with a sextet. We listen to Hoodwink from Amaryllis, featuring Adam O'Farrell on trumpet, Jacob Garchik on trombone, Patricia Brennan on vibraphone, Nick Dunstan on bass, and Tomas Fujiwara on drums. And before that, we heard from the duo Futari, pianist-composer Sotoko Fuji and vibraphonist Teiko Sato, from their release from 2021, Underground, on Libra Records. We heard the composition Air. Fuji and Sato are also two-thirds of the group San, with drummer Yuko Oshima. They'll be on a European tour beginning this Saturday, June 4th through June 10th. You're listening to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Please send your comments, quips, and anecdotes, as well as feedback to thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com, info@wgxc.org, feedback@wgxc.org, or leave a 3-minute message at area code 518-291-WGXC. Our website is wgxc.org. My guests are saxophonist Dave Rempus and drummer Tim Daisy. Dave owns and operates Aerophonic Records, and Tim owns and operates Relay Recordings, both out of Chicago, Illinois. So I want to thank you both for joining me here on Situation Fluxus.
Thank you, Cheryl. Really, really great to be back. We had a chance to talk, 6 weeks ago or so now about the Ballister tour. So like really nice to be back again so soon.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely thrilled. Thank you.
Dave, Aerophonic Records, founded in 2013, has its own website and sells through Bandcamp. Tim, Relay Recordings, founded in 2011, exists exclusively on Bandcamp. As independent labels, what are the challenges in getting a release out to fans? Let's start with Tim.
Actually, I don't think it's ever been easier, honestly. I have a website for my personal work as a drummer and composer, but I don't have a website for my record label, as you rightly noted. I have a link on my website and they can go straight to the Bandcamp. And for me, it's kind of ideal because where I am with my life and how busy I am with lots of other things, including music, but also doing other things like raising a family, et cetera, et cetera. Bandcamp provides an amazing platform for me. It makes it very easy to document the work I'm doing and put it out there and let all the fans see it pretty much as soon as I release it. So I would say it's really, I think before a lot of music switched over to the digital realm, I think it was harder then to get music out. I think it's a lot easier to get music out now. I think there's a lot of it being produced now. So I think it might be the challenge now is because there's so many thousands of releases coming out every day, maybe it's hard to get yours noticed in a sense, just because there's so much content being created now, because it's so easy to get it out there. But that being said, I would definitely say it's not so challenging getting it out there. Maybe it's challenging to get people to download it. but but it's certainly not anymore. It's certainly like, especially since I've had my label since 2011, I've got a number of followers. As soon as I release it, they all get a notification, and it's pretty straightforward, I have to say.
And Dave?
You know, for me, I mean, I think Tim just touched on a bunch of major points. I think the biggest thing right now about trying to get your music out there is that there's so much coming out. There's so much that's widely available. As things have moved into, particularly into streaming, you know, it's difficult to compete for a little bit of people's bandwidth to get them to actually pay attention to what you're doing. I am not going to mention the name of that company that that Tim was just talking about. I do use them for digital streaming and downloads, but I don't like the direction that it's headed in. It's already sold to a major video game manufacturer, and I think a lot of musicians who have been using that platform for the last few years are going to have to rethink how we're distributing our music independently through digital channels, because I think that company is about to change greatly. And it's concerned me since the beginning of the pandemic when they came out with their, you know, Friday thing where they made a big deal out of giving 10% of the money back to artists. But the fact is what they got in exchange for that was thousands, if not tens of thousands of independent artists saying their name for free over and over and over again, to the point where the only branding you get is their branding. It's not the branding for your label. It's not the branding for your music. It's not the branding for you as an artist. What all these independent artists started doing was working for that company. And I think that's really problematic, to be honest. And so I try not to say their name because, you know, to me, I want people to come to Aerophonic Records. I want them to know about Aerophonic Records. I don't want a third party intermediary in between me and that, basically. So that's kind of my approach to it.
But. Okay. Do you miss the days when someone else took care of the publicity and the booking of the recording studios and designing the record covers and paying the bills? I mean, come on, Dave.
Yes and no. And I do get to work with other record labels sometimes, and they take care of a lot of that. But, you know, I mean, as somebody who came into the music in the late 90s, it was already a time where a lot of that was transitioning from the former label model where they owned the music and they took care of everything and marketing and selling it and production. In some ways, it would be great. But I mean, if you look at the history of artists, particularly in jazz, really getting screwed over by labels in so many different ways, financially, in terms of the work that labels didn't do to help market and push so many artists. A lot of people really didn't have great relationships with their record labels. And now it's a lot more work for independent artists to do all that stuff. But I think the potential reward is also greater in that we can actually have control over what our releases look like and how they're written about and how they're talked about and where they're sold. So personally, I like that. I like having control over those things. I mean, Tim's known me for a long time and knows I'm kind of a control freak. But I appreciate, you know, having control over those things and being able to make decisions about those. So.
As long as he's a control freak, but he does all the driving on tour. So it even beautifully, man. He's a very good driver. And he sells all the CDs. You know, it's kind of amazing. can I just interject and add on to that, too?
Sure.
When I kind of came in to the scene in Chicago in the late 90s, it was already like the venue I was playing at a lot was called The Empty Bottle. And it was mostly a rock venue that would have experimental music, you know, twice a week. And there was already this DIY aesthetic kind of woven into the fabric of what was happening. And so I kind of never really had the like other label taking care of things, because even though I may have been on a couple other labels like Atavistic when I was in the Venomark 5, as was Dave, it was more like they took care of releasing things and they did take care of some of the publicity, but we were still doing a lot of the other work. Because we were touring, we were getting in the van, we were selling CDs, we were promoting the heck out of it. Like we were still doing the majority of the work. Now, I think where it's different is some of the artists that were used to maybe on major labels, where they label took care of a lot of it, and all they had to do was show up and play, you know, and travel and play. And that's completely changed, obviously. So that's, I think, in maybe the more pop world is where I think there's been a lot more of significant change connected to that. At least my read on it is like that. Because for me, I feel like I'm much more aligned with like probably what like Minor Threat and Fugazi was doing in the 80s, you know, when they maybe they signed to a label in Washington, but it was probably run by one of their friends. And they got in the van and they just started working. So it's kind of a DIY kind of aesthetic already that I've kind of been connected to from the very beginning.
Inevitably, you two talk to each other about your respective labels. What do you admire about what the other is doing?
Who should you want to tackle that one?
nothing at all. I'm threatened. I'm absolutely threatened by all this great stuff he's putting out. No, I admire just Dave's persistence. He keeps releasing these amazing records with all these great people he's doing on a regular basis. He's putting it out. It always comes with amazing artwork. The music, the level of music is always super high, and it's getting released. And he's really good at getting emails out to people. Super organized. He has a really professional website. He really is doing like a high level publicity and high level artistry, which is a lot of times, like, I feel like if I could spend more time on publicity, I would probably lose some of my creative stuff just because I don't have that much time. I'm busy doing a lot of different things. Well, with Dave, what blows me away is the music's at the highest level and the other stuff's taken care of. It's kind of amazing he's doing it himself, to be honest. Do you actually have an assistant helping you, Dave, that we don't know about?
No. I wish I did.
Well, if you need anyone, let me know, man.
You have a couple young ones.
I have a couple of young people. I got a 5-year-old who's willing to mail out some records. So you don't have to pay him that much.
That's right. Start him young.
Exactly. Yep. I'll pay him.
For me, is honestly been one of the funniest things about starting a record label is realizing that skills like cutting labels out and taping them to envelopes is one of my most important skills as an adult. You know, one of the things I learned probably around the time I was about 5 years old.
Yeah, that's a good skill. And man, the other thing I've learned is I have a really good relationship with the person at my post office.
Also very important.
And this is huge because, as we all know, the U.S. post office can be hit or miss sometimes. And the person that works at my local branch here in Evanston can be really hard on people who aren't prepared. And I can kind of see your point. It's like you're mailing a package. You come in here 100 times. You still don't know how to, the difference between a priority mail envelope, as you know. And I show up. I'm like, Misty, how's it going? I brought you a sparkling water. And she's like, Tim, get to the front of the line, you know. And I feel a little bit bad, but not that bad about it. It's helpful just being nice to people and when I'm shipping things and all that. And to Dave's point, I can't say I'm great at cutting labels out, but I'm getting better at it. But it's like, it's important work, you know. It's got to be done. And I'm just thrilled somebody in Germany wants to buy one of my CDs, you know.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, you have it in good with the post office when you come in with a bin of packages at 4:58 p.m. and yes, they'll still take it.
Yes, that's true. Yep. That's true. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yep.
Can I jump back to?
Yeah.
I wanted to, you know, talk about what I admire about Tim's label so much. To me, I mean, I think Tim's been putting out an extraordinary, not just amount of music, but the quality of the stuff he's putting out. And it also, the turnaround is so fast. I mean, I see things that Tim recorded a few months ago that are now out and available. And, you know, both the quality and the turnaround time, I think, is really amazing and it's just a model of what we should all be doing in terms of having our own label, getting the music out there as quickly as we can. I don't think Tim focuses as much on the marketing aspect as I do, but I think he's running his label incredibly intelligently, keeping expenses down and putting out great music. And all of those things are, you know, just, it's a model for what I think at this point, any artist can be doing it, you know, so.
Well, the beauty of running your own label is that you can document your own work. To the two of you, what are your label's new releases that include you?
Not to sound vain, but the majority of the stuff I put out does include me, just because that was the whole point of having my own little label. Is honestly the reason I really started it in 2011 was because I wanted to more accurately document my creative work in a more realistic timeline for me, time frame, because there's all these great labels that I've been very fortunate to have worked with in the past, but you pitch something to them. And if they accept to put it out, you're waiting about a year before it sees the light of day.
At least.
And sometimes longer than that. And I wanted to have a more accurate documentation because I'm a different person a year later. You know, I'm a different musician, and I wanted to have kind of a little bit more of an accurate timeline of my creative progress, if you want to call it that, or changes, and the new ensembles I'm putting together, not to mention the solo work I do. So that was really a huge impetus for me to even start this, because I knew no one's going to put this out faster than me. It's my own material. So that is like, and so that's why you look at Relay, and it's really, you know, you look at the releases, and if I'm not on there as a performer, I'm on there in some other way as a producer or something like that. But it really is meant to be a site that you can go to check out what I've been up to and all the different various aspects of my work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the same is true for me. I mean, I'm on everything that comes out on Aerophonic. And when I started the label, I thought, okay, if this goes in the right direction, at some point I may, you know, get on to putting out releases by other people. But I've just realized that, you know, there is a limit on my own time. There's a limit on the financial possibilities of the label. And, you know, I'm not really being compensated for the time I spend doing administrative work or marketing on any of these releases. And it became apparent pretty quickly, like, I really can't afford to put the type of time into somebody else's release that I would be able to put into mine, or that I'd be willing to put it into mine, if that makes sense. So
it does.
So up to this point, it, you know, it remains a label that features my work, basically. And the most recent things that have come out, like literally just about 19 minutes ago, we sent out the official announcement for a new record with the working quartet with myself and Joshua Abrams and Avriel Ra and Jim Baker, which is a band that's been working for about 10 years now. And so this is our fourth record. It's called Scylla. Just before that, in early April, I put out a trio record with Elizabeth Harnick, who's a great pianist from Austria, and Michael Zarang on percussion. And the release that came out just before that was a duo record, which is a limited edition LP with Avriel Ra on drums as a duo.
What types of artists do you surround yourself with for these recordings? Are they mostly people that you've played live with? People you would just admire from afar?
That's a great question. And I think it really pertains to the current situation in the last 2 years of COVID, because before COVID, I was mostly releasing stuff with people that I'd already performed with, people in the area, people mostly in the Chicago scene, a couple people from the New York scene, but I obviously, having been in Chicago for 22 years, definitely work obviously much more within the Chicago scene, and also some people in Europe too. But when COVID hit and we suddenly couldn't go anywhere, I used that kind of as a impetus to work with some people I've never worked before in a kind of remote fashion. So I reached out to Ikwe Mori, the great electronics musician based in New York, who I've always wanted to collaborate with. And I knew in the past, when all these people that you respect that are very busy, oftentimes you present something and I'd love to do it, but I'm on tour. I'm like, no one's on tour during COVID. So I said, you know what, I'm just going to ask her. And she said, yes. And so we have this remote collaboration where I sent her some files and she took them and manipulated them and sent them back to me, and we made a record. And that was an example of releasing something with somebody I've not really worked with very much at all. And I did the same thing with this percussionist, Vasco Trio, who's based in Barcelona. We had not worked together, but I sent him files. He reacted to them, sent them back to me. I reacted to them, and then we mixed them together and released a duo. Those are two examples of working with people who I've not previously really worked with before. But prior to that, prior to COVID, all the stuff you see on the label, on my label, are all people I have some kind of personal connection to, whether it's all, mostly Chicago scene, a few in the New York scene, and a little bit out in New York as well.
Yeah, for me, I mean, probably 80 or 90% of the music on Aerophonic is all recorded live. Part of that is because I prefer the energy of live performances. There's something about improvised music in a studio that can be very, very challenging to kind of get to the type of energy level that you do in a live situation. So for that reason, you know, most of the artists I work with are, folks who I know, who I'm touring with, who I'm, you know, working with pretty regularly, basically. So the majority of the stuff on Aerophonic, I mean, while there's certainly some documents of first-time interactions, I would say that's the minority of stuff on the label. The majority of it are existing projects that work somewhat regularly and have a history together. So,
gentlemen, it is unofficially the start of summer in Chicago and around the country, and that means a lot will be happening. Arts and music festivals, exhibits and events. What are you involved in what's happening in Chicago this summer and into the early fall?
Who wants to go first?
I can jump on it. I mean, summer in Chicago is always like this wonderful time because everyone comes out in winter. And this literally just happened over the last week where it's like, you know, it's still like in the 50s and snowing and, you know, until like the first week of June. And then suddenly it's 90 degrees and everybody's outside in shorts, like so excited that it's finally summer. So that literally happened last week and you can already feel the feeling on the street. It's totally different. People are in a good mood. They're ready to hang out. There's outdoor festivals that happen all throughout the summer. That doesn't necessarily affect the jazz world quite so much since we're not like the big outdoor rock festival or neighborhood festival types. But, you know, there's infrastructure of clubs and concerts happening in Chicago throughout the year. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff coming up over the summer. I would say it does actually sometimes tend to be a little bit quieter at the clubs in the summertime because people are traveling. They're going to Europe to play a festival. They're traveling around the States to play. I'd say most exciting times in Chicago tend to be spring and fall, because that's when so many festivals, like jazz related festivals, are happening and musicians are out on the road. So the kind of biggest parts of the season in terms of festival stuff, at the beginning of September on Labor Day weekend, the Chicago Jazz Festival happens. And then a few weeks later, at the end of September, the Hyde Park Jazz Festival happens. I'm involved in organizing Hyde Park Jazz Festival. So for me, summer ends up being a busy period where I'm working on a lot of the organizational aspects of that festival. But by September, it's like, you know, from one weekend to another, it's like there's so many amazing things happening from then generally all the way through till Christmas. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what they've said is exactly, absolutely 100% true. Clubs do tend to have a little bit less activity. But what's interesting in Europe, it's still different than Europe. In Europe, it's like everything shuts down except for the outdoor festivals. Where here, there's still some activity. I look forward, I have some things in Milwaukee, some of it with Dave actually, some of it with some other people that I'm looking forward to. I have some things in Madison, Wisconsin coming up, and things in Chicago, including something I was doing before the pandemic was having a birthday concert. And I would put an ensemble together and either write for it or be an improvised music ensemble. And I'd have it on my birthday and have a big party and record it. And I had to, you know, obviously cancel that for the last 2 years. But this year I'm doing it at Elastic Arts Foundation. It's on Dave's series, actually. And I'm really looking forward to that because I put together a night of three improvising trios. And that'll be in the middle of July. And that's going to be fun. And I also just found out that I'll be playing the Chicago Jazz Festival with trumpet player Russ Johnson in September. And as Dave mentioned, September, like into the fall, is a really exciting time to be in Chicago, because come September, it feels like not only is there the Chicago Jazz Fest, and then later on the Hyde Park Fest, but all the clubs have kind of opened up full tilt as well. So there's just so much activity happening. And it's just a really pleasant time to be in Chicago. Mm-hmm. Also because it's, you know, August is pretty brutally hot. The weather finally tends to chill out a little bit. And you got all this happening, all this music happening outside and inside. It's just a really great time to be around. So I'm very much looking forward to that. Mm-hmm.
All right, gentlemen, we are coming to the end of this interview. So I'd like to give my guests the last word. If there's something that I didn't ask you that you'd like to tell us about, any sage advice to keep cool during the hot weather coming up, especially here in the Northeast?
Oh, this is the first time in my life that I've lived in a place with central air. It's been a couple of years that my wife and I bought a house, and I would recommend that for sure.
Oh, heaven.
So go for central air is what I, and you know what? And the other thing, more connected to music, I've seen a lot of younger, I teach a few lessons. I've got a few students, and I've seen a lot of drummers coming up asking me a lot of questions about Chicago. And if any of them listen to this, maybe none of them will, but, and I tell them this in my lessons too, is be patient when you enter a scene like Chicago. Like I moved to Chicago in 97 and I wasn't doing any kind of regular playing until really regular playing until the end of the 2000s. It took me years. I mean, Dave and I were working together since 98, but we would get really excited because we had this one gig coming up. Like, next month, we have this one gig coming, you know? And you just got to be patient and just hang around and be a nice person to deal with and just keep working on your music. And it takes a while, but things will start happening. There's my little nugget of advice to the young aspiring avant-garde drummers entering the Chicago scene. I'm sure it applies to other places too, I don't guess.
I'm going to hop back to the record label thing really quick. Yeah. It's my nugget of advice, which is just to younger musicians. It's like all the tools are in place nowadays to have your own label and to get your music out there and to pursue it however you want, do as much or as little marketing as you want. But I think with Tim's label and my label, I mean, it's we have very different working modes, but the underlying idea is getting your music out there in an era where, you know, increasingly fewer outlets are going to take care of that for you. And so I think it's something that musicians really need to be conscious of, is really building up a fan base and building up an audience, not just through live performance, but also through their recordings. And all that is possible. So just be thinking about that, you know.
For more information on Dave Rempis and Aerophonic Records, aerophonicrecords.com. And for more information on Tim Daisy and Relay Recordings, Tim Daisy Relay Records. .bandcamp.com. And we close out with one more.
What a night, even lightning bugs have dimmed their light. Stars have disappeared from sight and there's no moon at all. Don't make a sound, it's so dark. Even Fido is afraid to bark. What a perfect night to park, and there's no moon at all. Should we want atmosphere for inspiration, dear? One kiss will make it clear. The moon is bright, the bright moonlight might interfere. There's no moon at all up above. This is nothing like they told us of. What a perfect night for love, and there's no moon at all. Atmosphere for inspiration, dear. One kiss will make it clear. The moon is bright, the bright moonlight might interfere. There's no moon at all up above. This is nothing like they told us all. What a perfect night for love, and there's no moon at all. No moon at all. No moon at all.
From the new release by actor, producer, and multi-Grammy-nominated vocalist Seth MacFarlane, modern big band orchestrations of up-tempo tunes, we heard No Moon at All from his seventh release, Blue Skies, on Verve Republic Records. Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. I've been your host, Cheryl Kay. Tune in next Thursday at 10 a.m. for another show. I also host the Jazz Disturbance on the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 5th Sunday of each month from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. To contact us about Situation Fluxus, thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com or info@wgxc.org. We appreciate your feedback. Feedback@wgxc.org or leave a 3-minute message at area code 518-291-WGXC. Thank you. We'll be right back.
preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.